your host, Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal. Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Ontario country artist Tiana Woods is here. She has just released her seventh single to country radio, and it's called Rain on the Roses, written by Derek Rattan and Cyril Rawson. And Tiana has invited two of her friends, the hit songwriting husband and wife team of Carrie Chater and Lynn Gillespie Chater. They have written big songs you all know and love, songs by Lee Greenwood, George Strait, Reba, Alabama, Paul Brandt, Anne Murray, and many, many more. We're going to get into stories about the songs and play several of them as well. And Carrie and Lynn have also written a couple of novels, and we'll talk about that. I am pleased to welcome to my show Tiana Woods, Carrie Chater, and Lynn Gillespie Chater. Welcome, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Dave.
Great to have a full house here. We've got Carrie and Lynn on the line from Nashville and Tiana from Ontario, so we are connected. And we have so much to talk about. Hard to know where to start, but Tiana, first of all, welcome back to the show. You've been here so many times, and I just saw you recently at a CMAO meeting. It was great to see you again.
It sure was great to see you, Dave. And you know what? It's always great to be on your show. It's always great talking to you.
It is. It's a lot of fun hearing your new stories, and it's going to be so great to share this song. We'll talk about it first. Rain on the Roses, Derek Rattan and Cyril Ross, and two hit songwriters who have written many a hit song. How did you come across Rain on the Roses?
Well, you know, Dave, Cyril Rawson, we've been chatting over the last few months. He's an incredible songwriter. And he actually sent me quite a few songs, because I'm always listening to songs because I'm working on a couple of albums right now. And he sent me a group of them, and I just started listening to them with my producer. And Rain on the Roses just really stuck out to me. I just really liked the song. And then Cyril had told me that him and Derek had written it, which was great because Derek is an amazing songwriter as well. And I decided, mm-hmm. you know what, this has such a great story to it. The melody is really, really nice, and I just decided to record it.
Yeah, it's got a really cool melody. There's something unique about it, the chords in certain spots. It's just got something really special to it, and we're going to hear that in a bit. Of course, Lynn and Carrie on the line from Nashville, and you were there not too long ago, Tiana, probably writing and performing. Can you update us on your trip?
Yeah, I was there for their Music Fest week, which was incredible. Great experience, so much music, so much things to see. And when I was there, we always make a habit of going and seeing Lynn and Carrie. They're almost like family to us now, so it's always great to visit them, whether we're writing together or we're just, you know, catching up on everything. So it was a lot of fun. So
we feel the same way.
Yeah, it was great. And actually, so we had lunch last time we were there, and Lynn took us over to Alan Jackson's old ranch and showed us, they have a horse. She showed us their horse as well as the horses that she takes care of there. So what a great trip.
Wow.
We also saw Dolly's house right down the street.
We did, yes. She took us on a bit of a tour. And you can check out some pictures that we have. We'll be posting them soon from the trip.
Very cool. And I'll just pass out both websites. We've got TiannaWoods.com, and we'll talk about some special things happening there, and ChaterSongs.com. We can learn more about Lynn and Carrie, and there's a whole list of all the songs they've written and had cut and had big hits on, and about the books that they've authored. We'll talk about that as well. But Carrie and Lynn, my goodness, some of the songs you have written are songs that are my favorites in country music. Lee Greenwood, IOU, one of the first songs that I heard of Lee's back in 83, and he had been out a couple of years, but that sort of got me exposed to him, and love that song. Carrie, you wrote that along with Austin Roberts. And a song that the two of you wrote together, which we're going to share on the show later, Paul Brandt's song, which is I Meant to Do That. The two of you wrote that with him. And there's George Strait, there's Reba, Jennifer Warnes. Let's talk about Paul Brandt for a moment, how the two of you met up with Paul to write the song.
Well, the A&R director of Warner Brothers Records sent out a letter to 10 established writers asking if any of them would write with a newcomer coming in from Canada. And we were the only ones who answered the letter. And we said, sure, we'll write with Paul. And so this was before he even had a deal. And he came over to the house. We have a studio upstairs over our garage. And as happens a lot of times, there's no windows in studios, so you don't know when it's getting dark. So the whole bottom of the house was dark. We were upstairs, finished the song, and were laying down final vocals. And we had forgotten that we invited the head of A&R and her husband over for dinner that night. And so the three of us are up in the studio laying down final vocals on I Meant to Do That. We were so excited about the song. And they're ringing the doorbell and pounding on the door. And we run down. The whole bottom of the house is dark. I had nothing for dinner. And I threw some spaghetti in a pot. And she kind of moved it around on her plate and put her napkin on it, you know. But we said, come listen to this song. And she loved it. And that was one of the songs that got him his record deal on Warner Brothers.
Put into that story is that there are times when you start working with someone that you're not familiar with and you don't know, and so we didn't know what to expect and we had no expectations, and Paul came over and he sat at the kitchen table as we were just introducing ourselves and getting to know each other, and then he just started singing, and it was one of those moments when you sit back in your chair and go, wow. You know, so far exceeds any expectation we could have had. Such an amazing voice that he had, and that just set the whole tone, and we just took it from there and went and wrote the song.
Paul was a pediatric nurse before he became famous in music, and he came with the chorus of that song, and it was a chorus that he sung to a little girl that since passed away, and we listened to him singing the chorus of the song, and out of my mouth just came the verses, just blah, 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 and then Carrie brought the bridge in, and it just worked so well as a song together that we just ran up in the studio and put it down.
That is amazing. I mean, he sings it with such emotion, and I had to know that there was some kind of story behind it that he connected with, because you can tell, and we're going to share the song later, and obviously people have heard it before, the song, but he sings it so emotionally and so beautifully, and I'm sure he's had stories over the years, and maybe the two of you have heard them from him or just on your own, but the impact that this song has had on people who've heard it.
I've never heard that, but that's great. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I think it's one of those songs that people connect with, and, you know, it's a song about somebody singing with regret and the things they would change, and I'm sure that that song has one of those songs in country music that has had that kind of impact.
I love that. Thank you.
I want to talk about another song. We're going to get to the Paul Brown. We're actually going to play that song later, but there's so many of your songs to cover. Before we get back to Tiana, let's talk about Lee Greenwood and that big hit from 1983 called IOU, which is such a romantic and such a great love song.
That was a lot of fun to write. Austin Roberts, the co-writer, is a dear friend of mine, has been forever and ever. And he was in Nashville. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I would go to Nashville or come to Nashville twice a year for 2 weeks to write with the Nashville writers because I just enjoyed the music so much, and over the years we became friends. And there was a time when Austin came out to Los Angeles, and we, of course, made appointments to write. And we got together and wrote a couple of songs. And then on the third day, he came in and he said, I need to write a song, a very particular song. And I said, okay. And I was kind of sitting there with a guitar on my lap. And he said, yeah, it's real important to me because it's for my wife and it's on our anniversary. And I just don't know what I want to say. But it's important that I write something for her. And I said, well, like what? What do you want to say? And he just started talking. I'd like to say I can't believe how much I love it, whatever. And as he spoke the words, I just hit a chord on the guitar and sang them back at him. And he didn't catch on for a minute that I was just almost mimicking. And it was somehow coming out, so it kind of rhymed. And I didn't think beyond, hey, let's just, whatever he's saying, I'll just put it to music. So when we're halfway through, he realizes, wait a minute, you're just singing back what I'm saying to you. I said, well, it sounds good to me. How about you? Yeah, do you like it? And he started to
Amazing.
Chuckle and said, yeah, I guess that's what I wanted to say. And I said, well, that's what you're saying, so let's put that down. And it was done in 20 minutes, and then we went in and did a demo, and he was happy and I was happy. And we were thrilled that Lee did it. Lee is such a wonderful singer. Again, another great voice.
Mm-hmm.
And real friendly, down-to-earth kind of artist, and we just love the fact that he got a hold of that and did that one.
His voice is great for romantic ballads like that and just capturing the tenderness, all of that. When you write a song like that, maybe specifically that song, IOU, did you pitch it around? Did it get pitched around and almost considered by other artists before Lee picked it up? Because I know that happens a lot, a song that sounds like, it, you know, a great song like that, a hit song, sometimes takes a couple of tries to find the home.
It does. This particular one we sent to Jerry Crutchfield, the producer, who we both Austin and I knew. And he was the first one that we took it to. And he said, I love this, and let's make a couple little changes in the second verse, and then let's go with it. So it was not a difficult pitch at all. But I know what you mean, Dave. There are lots of songs where we have to pitch them more than once to get anybody to listen, and there are other artists that just ignore it. And, in fact, I think Lynn's going to tell you a great story about that when we talk about some other songs.
Perfect. I can't wait to hear that story. We're going to get to that. We're going to turn back to Tiana because we're about to play Rain on the Roses, her brand-new single, her seventh single. Written, and we'll talk about it, written by a couple of great hit songwriters who happen to be Canadian, Cyril Rawson and Derek Rattan. But, Tiana, before we get to the song, you are working on a show right now, and I know your dad, who is a great help with your career, is a big part of it, but you're planning a new show to really wow audiences.
Yeah, I sure am. I'm working on a tour right now for Ontario. And it's going to be a little bit different, Dave. What we're trying to do is I don't want to just get up and sing on stage. As you know, and I think the listeners know, I play a number of instruments. So I really want to incorporate the instruments I play as well as incorporate my music theater background and my dance background in the show and just kind of make it a well-rounded just night of entertainment. So the first half of the show is going to focus strictly on country music, which will be great, and we will be doing some of the Tater songs, which is great. And then the second half, will be kind of a variety of songs that I've grown up with and that have inspired me over the years. Everything from Led Zeppelin to some other rock songs, just, you know, a variety of songs there. Barry Manilow, just a bit of a variety. And then again, I'll incorporate my instruments. So, you know, just trying to make it a real entertaining night.
I love when an artist does that, share songs, whether it's from the same genre, country, or outside there, but songs that have influenced you, and that sounds great that you're doing that. And speaking of those instruments, there's six of them, and I think I've got them here, piano, guitar, saxophone, drums, clarinet, and I think more recently, fiddle.
Yeah, and I'm also adding the North American flute, so we're adding that to the show. It's something I'm starting to work on as well. Fiddle is my new instrument as well, so I'm working on that.
Yeah.
But the North American flute, such a haunting sound, and we're going to add that into the show for one of the songs.
That is going to be an incredible show. When we come back after the song, I'll ask you about TiannaWoods.com and how people can sign up and the benefit they have from becoming a member through your website, and lots more with Carrie and Lynn Chater. Songs of theirs coming up and more great stories. Let's turn to the brand new single from Tiana Woods. This is Rain on the Roses on In the Country. And that is Ontario country artist Tiana Woods with her brand new song called Rain on the Roses, sounding great on that. And you must enjoy singing that one, Tiana. It's, as I said, it's got a great melody to it.
You know what? I really enjoyed singing that one. My producer and I really, Rick Hutt, really worked on that one. It just kind of pushed my limits a bit. And you know what? I like that. And we're working on a new one now, a new single. It's called Wow, which is really different and fun. So that'll be out hopefully within the next month or so. Cyril
and,
also
Rick
wrote that one, too.
Cyril Rawson has written the new one.
Yeah, he has. He has. And Rick has produced all of my singles. Yeah, and Cyril just happened to write this next song as well.
Well, that is, I'd love to hear that when you go back to a songwriter because you like their stuff, and obviously he keeps writing great stuff. So that is super. Let's talk about your website, TianaWoods.com. Now, for anybody listening, they can go and sign up there. Tell us how that works and what the benefit is to them.
Yeah, so we have something right now called the VIP Friends. So if you go to my website at TianaWoods.com, on the main page there's a button called VIP Friends, and it would really be great if all the listeners could sign up for that. What we're doing is we'll be giving away free music, some other giveaways, which is amazing. And also we're going to be doing a contest for Lynn and Carrie's two books that they've written. And basically they're going to be collector's items because they'll be autographed. So if everybody registers for that, then we will be running a contest for that in the next few weeks. And again, they're autographed, so you can't...
Sounds terrific. It's TianaWoods.com. Let's turn to the Chaters, Carrie and Lynn Chater. So many hit songs from them, and you can learn more about them at chatersongs.com. Let's talk about, it's the song that you wrote with Carrie and Cyril Ross, and once again his name comes up as a songwriter. It's on the Ann Murray song, That's the Way It Goes. We're going to share that later in the show. But how did all three of you write this song and get it to Ann Murray?
We had been writing with Cyril for a number of years, and he would come over every Wednesday, and we'd sit at our kitchen table. And he came over one week and said, Anne is looking for a song like Let's Give Him Something to Talk About, which Bonnie Raitt had multiple Grammys on. Well, Anne had that on hold for about a year before she let it go, and then Bonnie Raitt picked it up and won multiple awards with it. Well, when you write for Ann Murray, you can't do the normal cheating songs or the normal first love songs or, you know, any of that. So she wanted something that was like, let's give him something to talk about. And so Cyril said, well, let's try to write a couple songs and send it to her. So we wrote two songs. One was That's the Way It Goes, and one was a song called A Far Cry from Crying Over You. And we thought both songs would be perfect for Ann Murray. So we sent them to her publisher. She refused. We sent them to the producer. We sent them to her accountant. We sent them to her business manager and her manager and her. And she kept turning them back and passing on those songs. But we kept sending them to anyone who knew Ann Murray. This is what you were talking about before, multiple pitches. And finally we got a note back from Ann that said, okay, I'll do this song, That's the Way It Goes, but don't ever send me that other song again. And
oh my.
So we put a far cry on one of Carrie's solo CDs. So anyway, That's the Way It Goes is a song we wrote with Cyril and Carrie and I, and we had fun doing it, and we had fun pitching it around. But we always pitched it to Ann because we thought it was perfect for her. And so she put it on two of her CDs and started her TV special, An Intimate Evening with Ann Murray, with that song, and we were thrilled. Thank you, Ann.
Great song.
Yeah, I've interviewed Ann in the past, and I'm a huge fan of hers. Great voice, legend in music, of course. We're going to hear this song later called That's the Way It Goes, and there's great lyrics in it, along with it being catchy. It's just really, really well written. But on the subject, Lynn, you talked about that was an example of sort of pitching over and over to Ann. Can you think of another song that you've written or the two of you have written that took multiple pitches to different artists that finally found that home?
Yes. We wrote a song for Jessica Andrews called You Go First, and it was one of her first singles. And we, again, with Cyril Rawson, actually, he came over and he said, so there's this new girl being produced by Byron Gallimore, and they have the album finished, but they don't think there's a single on it, and they're looking for one more song. Let's write for her. So we wrote the song, You Go First, and I took it over there, but they didn't seem, they were okay with it. And so I just, the very next day, I took it for Lori Morgan, and I took it for the Dixie Chicks, and I left it at CBS, and I left it at CBS Sony, and I left it at BMG. And so about the next week, Cyril comes over and says, thanks for the hold. And I said, what hold? He said, the hold on Jessica Andrews, You Go First. I said, well, nobody told me, and we don't give holds. Now, a hold in Nashville is when an artist promises to do a song. But the thing is, they may put 100 songs on hold for a 10-song album. So a hold means nothing. It just means you take your song off the market. So I said, well, we don't give holds. You have to have the record company, the producer, and the artist all sign off on the song in order for me to give you a hold. And so I went, and they all signed off on it, and I called them every week, and they cut it within 2 weeks, and it became her first single. So we were thrilled, but then I had to call the Dixie Chicks, and I had to call Lori Morgan and tell them they couldn't have it.
Yeah, isn't that something? That's pretty amazing. I remember that song from Jessica, and that did great for her. I think there was a pretty cool video for it as well.
There was a wonderful video, and it started out where she was driving a Volkswagen, but she was only 13 at the time and couldn't drive. And so the people outside of the frame were pushing that Volkswagen that she was driving in the video. And we got the license plate that had a U, a GO, and a 1ST. You go first.
Oh, wow. I love that story. We're going to turn to Paul Brandt. I meant to do that in just a few moments. But, you know, I talked about how this song, I'm sure, has had an impact on people, like a lot of country songs people take to heart, maybe changes their lives, inspires them, is cathartic for them. But for you, Carrie, how important is it for you to write those kind of songs that you feel as you're writing or maybe when they're done that this could really have a positive impact on others?
You know, David, it's really super important. I'm just a writer, and that I have done other things, and I've been in rock groups, and I've done solo albums, and et cetera. But really, all I've ever wanted to do is write. And for the writer, there's not that many ways that you can know that you're being successful. Of course, if you get a hit, then you know that's a success. But you always hope for the kind of success that you don't always hear back, which is what you're talking about, where it affected someone in a positive way in their life that goes beyond, they bought the record or they liked the song on the radio. It goes mm-hmm. to, gee, this had a meaning for me. I was going through a troubled time, or I was going through a great time, and this was a part of that adventure. So
right.
It's probably the most important thing, even beyond having a hit or anything else, is I had a positive effect on someone else for a moment, and that's a wonderful event for me.
Well, we're going to share a song now that falls into that category. It's an emotional song. It's just beautiful, from Alberta's own Paul Brandt, who has done so well on the country music scene in Canada and beyond. And this song was written by Paul and my guests, Carrie and Lynn Chater. And a big hit for Paul, beautiful song called I Meant to Do That, here on In the Country.
A rose in a box, wrapped up in dreams, a card that explains how much you love me. Table for two, with soft candlelight, the words I love you, somewhere in the night. I meant to do that. Does that mean a thing? If you want it so, then I meant to say I'd give you the world if you'd give mine back what I didn't do. I meant to do
And that is Paul Brandt with his big hit, beautiful song, I Meant to Do That. It was written by Paul along with Carrie and Lynn Chater, who are joining me on the show on the line from Nashville. We're also joined by Ontario country artist Tiana Woods, and they all three are friends and songwriters together, and it's just terrific. Tiana, the last time you were on the show, another friend that you all have in common, Donna Ulisi, you shared a song that the two of you recorded, which is beautiful, called Every Angel Needs Some Heaven.
Yes, beautiful song. I was really, really happy that Donna recorded it with me. It turned out incredible. And I actually met Donna through Lynn and Carrie when I went to Nashville. I think it was my second trip. And we all sat down together and did a song that they recorded together called Another World, which I'm actually putting on my album as well, and it will be in my show. And what a great day we had that day. It was just a lot of fun. We were outside. You know, I got to sing the melody of the song, and they did some harmony for me. Yeah, and we have a video of that, too, that we'll have to post. What a great time it was.
It was fun.
It must be so great to write with people you get along with so well and have a good time.
Well, Tiana's energy. She is so fun and full of energy, and she walks into a room and the whole place lights up. So you can't help but smile and be around her.
Well, thank you.
Pretty amazing.
And they're so fun, too. You know what? The two of them have such a wealth of knowledge, and there's so much talent with the writing between both of them, and they have so many incredible stories. You can't help but love both of them. And you know what? Two incredible people. So it's great writing with them. You know, we've written together in Nashville, and now that when my schedule starts to die down a little bit, we're going to do some Skype writing as well.
Right. Love Skype.
Awesome. Great way to write, right? Carrie and Lynn and Tiana, these days, I mean, it's like you're there in person. You're seeing the person and hearing them.
That's right. And
yeah.
You don't have to be in the same city to be right in a writer situation.
Yeah, what an amazing thing.
Yeah. Carrie, I wanted to ask you, you have had, both of you had so many songs recorded by so many people. Is there an artist so far that has eluded a Chater song that you are just waiting to have them record one?
Well, I would have loved to get a cut with Elvis, but of course, all the great artists that are out there now, I would love for any of them to share in our songs. There isn't necessarily one particular one, but there are certainly lots of talented people out there, and I'm excited to be a part of it all right now.
When you guys do demos, speaking of that, when a song might feel like it's right for a certain artist, obviously it's the songwriting and maybe the way the demo is done. But Lynn, talk about demos, and for the songs that you pitch, you know, is this a studio you have? You record your own demos, and how do you go about you know, doing a ballad versus an up-tempo song?
Well, we have a studio in our home that we built when we built the house, and I'm so fortunate to be married to a man who sings and plays everything, and he programs a lot of our demos, and if it's a female singer, then we get a female to come in and sing the songs. I want people to like it, so I don't sing it myself, but Carrie sings all our male vocals, or if it's really country and we have a specific artist in mind, we may hire a demo singer who sounds like that. But for the most part, Carrie's the music and I'm the words, and we'll sit up in the studio, and by the time I'll have an idea and I'll say it to him, and he's famous for singing it back at you. Our Mindy McCready hit, Have a Nice Day, was a song that we wrote, a true story about my Aunt Jewel and a waitress. And so I told the story, and he just sang the words back to me, and we didn't change a thing. And so we put it down, and Carrie sang the original demo, and Barry Beckett, producer, who, God rest his soul, he's a phenomenal producer, but he wanted Carrie's version, but we said, no, it's a female song, we need to get a female demo singer. So we hired a female singer to come in, but most of the time, Carrie will have everything programmed by the time I finish the second verse, because once you write the first verse and that music and the chorus and that music, you just have to finish writing the
fill
words.
Fill in the
blanks. Yeah, so.
That's and right, fill in, exactly.
He puts down all the instruments, guitars, keyboards, bass, drums, everything. So to answer your question, a ballad versus an up-tempo, it's just the instrumentation. Or usually ballads we have pretty minimal. We do it more acoustic. The up-tempos take a little more production.
And that totally makes sense. I've heard that a lot, that if you are pitching a ballad, you can have it a little more sparse because it doesn't need everything to dress it up.
In fact, Carrie, what was IOU?
IOU, back to that song, was just me and a guitar, and we went to a friend who had a studio that he had just built, and he wasn't quite sure how to run it all yet, but he was pretty good at it. And I said, all I need is a microphone and some way to get it to tape or whatever, and so he said, well, go ahead, start singing, and we did it with just the guitar and the vocal, and it was one of those easy pitches that ended up getting Lee Greenwood a Grammy, so it was a wonderful event. That was an easy one. The most of the time, though, you want to try to put as much of the arrangement that you're hearing for the song on a demo as you can, so that you're giving the producers a real idea of what the song can be and mm-hmm. give them suggestions about it. Well, you can do this or do that. The more you can give them, most of the time, the more they like it. Of course, there are those producers who just want, no, just give me a guitar vocal because I want to do the arranging, or I've got my favorite arranger, and we might want to take it a little differently than the way the writer is hearing it. But, you know, to refer back to Skype for a minute, the technology is so great in the studio or on Skype or wherever we go that it gives the writer a kind of another chance to show what they mean when they write a song, because they can put on instruments that are in a box, you know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
And as long as you do it and do it well, then you're ahead of the game. The technology can also hurt you if you're not quite sure how to run it. But everyone's so educated to it now. It's really great. So that helps a lot.
Now, do you ever hesitate with a song and it's been pitched and maybe it's ended up with a new artist considering it, you know, a new artist without a proven track record versus a George Strait or an Alabama? Are you ever concerned about that, or is that exciting because that might be the song that puts them on the map?
David, it can go both ways. And Lynn can tell you a story. We wrote a song, and there was a producer who had a new artist, and he loved the song. And so we said, okay, fine. And he said, now I need to know that I've got this song because I have a new artist. So we said, yeah, fine, that's fine, go ahead. Well, a week later, I had forgotten that we had promised this song. And I got a call from someone who had heard it, another producer, and they said, hey, we want to do this song with Trisha Yearwood. And we love it, and we need charts and lyrics because we're going to do it tonight. So I said, well, okay, I'll go look for the lyrics and whatever. And so Lynn came home that day, and I said, hey, Trisha wants to do this song, and I'm looking for the lyrics. Where are they? And she said, well, that song's already on hold for a new artist.
I freaked because we had, and then we called this producer to see if we could get the song back because we'd already, and he picks up, he's in the control room, and our song is blaring out of the speakers. You know? So, and I'm so excited about this song. And, you know, Trisha was big at the time, and we're looking at houses, boats, and cars, you know. But we had to be true to our word and call up and say, I'm sorry, Trisha, you can't have the song.
Then I had to call the second producer and say, I'm sorry, you guys can't have that song. And he said, what do you mean? You must be out of your mind. You know, well, I probably am out of my mind, but you can't have the song anyway.
And then the new artist never came out.
And it never happened.
No. But at least we have our word.
Yeah.
Either honest,
we're honest too. We're poor but honest.
I guess, I mean, there is that component to the music business, right? I mean, your reputation and your word and all those things are pretty important, especially in Nashville, a small music community, right? Big and yet
small.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like a college campus.
It really is.
Right. We're going to get back and talk a lot more with the Chaters because I want to ask them about these books, a couple of books they've written. I think there's even a third on the way. We're going to get to that after an Anne Murray song that they wrote in a moment. But, Tiana, I wanted to turn back to you and ask you about your influences, those artists when you were younger and even to this day that excite you about music.
Sure. Well, I have such a well-rounded background in music, Dave, so there are a lot of different artists that I really respect and listen to. But if we're looking like strictly for country, you know, really through the years, I would say Merle Haggard is a huge inspiration. I really respect him as a songwriter and an artist. And then also Reba McEntire. I really, really enjoy Reba. I've seen her a couple of times at Fallsview Casino, and she's just amazing to watch. Such an incredible talent. Yeah, four times at Fallsview. And then a little more current, Keith Urban is incredible. Saw him as well at the Fallsview Casino, but, you know, I don't really like him because he actually stood beside me at Fallsview Casino and he sang a song and he was playing his guitar. Incredible guitar player, by the way. But he was playing the song and he took the guitar off and he signed it and he gave it to the girl beside me.
Oh, no.
That was a little bit exciting, and I had a show the next day, and I could have been playing Keith Urban guitar.
That would have been so cool.
Yeah, that was upsetting. And then
you know,
also Sugarland. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say there could be a song in there. I almost had Keith Urban's guitar. Or
that's true. There you go. Lynn and Carrie, let's write that song.
That's heartbreaking to be that close.
Yeah, it was very, very. I even have a picture of that. I'm standing right beside him. It was upsetting, but it was still a great show.
Now, you were saying Sugarland, of course, Jennifer Nettles is such a show person.
Oh, I love Jennifer Nettles. She's incredible. I know they're not really together right now, but I still love their music. And Band Perry I really, really enjoy, too. I've seen them live a couple of times and actually saw them when I was in Nashville. Just a great show, great production. Yeah, so those are a few I have many more, but those are a few.
Those are a few, so I know that your show that you're putting together is going to be amazing with these influences and Led Zeppelin, as you mentioned earlier. I mean, it's going to be so diverse. We have a lot more to talk about with Tiana Woods and Carrie and Lynn Chater. TianaWoods.com and ChaterSongs.com is where you can check them all out online. Now we're going to turn to the song written by Carrie and Lynn Chater, along with Cyril Rawson, whose name is coming up on the show a lot. Anne Murray recorded this. It's called That's the Way It Goes on In the Country. And there's music legend Anne Murray with the song That's the Way It Goes here on In the Country. I am joined by Ontario country artist Tiana Woods, who has a brand new single out called Rain on the Roses. I'm also joined by Carrie and Lynn Chater, who have written a ton of songs over the years for people like Lee Greenwood, George Strait, Restless Heart, Alabama, Tanya Tucker, Reba McEntire, Paul Brandt, and the list goes on and on. And not only do they write great songs, but they've written a couple of books. First one called Kill Point, second is Blood Debt. These are action thriller novels. Before we get into that, Carrie, I was reading up on your mom, Elizabeth Chater, and she wrote a bunch of books, over 20 books, and she was a great writer.
Yes, she was. She was also an English professor at San Diego State University, and she later in life decided that she wanted to write several different genres, mainly romance novels that deal with the Georgian period in England, which is the 20-year period where King George was on the throne. And so she researched them very heavily, and she wrote wonderful, wonderful books. There, I think there's 23 or 4 of those romances. And then she wrote science fiction, which was another passion of hers. And she was in the group that started Comic-Con. She was not featured as someone who was a part of that, but she was behind the scenes with the group that started Comic-Con in San Diego, and she has written wonderful books, and my son is currently republishing them all.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, I was reading up, your son as well, not only a publisher, he's written a few books himself.
Absolutely. He is an author. He's third generation now for writing books. And he's mainly in the science fiction genre, and we love his work as well. And he's having a great time with that. And and we love the fact that he would care enough to republish all my mom's works.
For sure.
And
that
also
is,
he's helping us with ours, too.
Quite special.
So he's super talented.
Wow. Yeah, well, tell us about these books. So the first one was Kill Point. How did you two decide you were going to sit down and write a novel? How did that come about?
You go, Carrie.
Well, we'd done lots of songwriting and stuff, and then one day we kind of both had an idea, well, you know, wouldn't it be fun to try novel writing? And I said to Lynn, I said, well, you know, I've got this idea, and it's based on a couple of TV shows that they ran in the 70s and 80s and whatever, but it's about this girl who wants to be an Olympic diver, and she gets off track as she's going toward the Olympics and looks like she's going to be the choice. She goes off track and falls in love with a guy who she doesn't know is actually an assassin. And so he's obsessed with her and gets her to marry him, and then he realizes he has to kill her, because if she ever finds out what he does, it's all over for him. So
right.
He attempts to kill her, and she survives. He tries to drug her and send her over the cliff in a car into the Mediterranean, and even though she's drugged, she kind of maneuvers herself out of this Porsche convertible so that she hits the water and is only crippled and not killed. And so I was telling Lynn, how about that as an idea? Would you be interested in writing a novel? And she loved the idea and said, yeah, let's do this, let's do that, let's do the next thing. And it turned into the first book, which is Kill Point.
When you write songs, you only have about 16 lines, and there's no addendum B. But when you write a novel, you can describe more, you can put more plot points in, you can develop your characters more. So it was very liberating for us to be able to write a book and not be restricted to 16 lines.
It all rhymes. What we would say to each other is the good news is we're not limited to just 16 lines. The bad news is we're not limited to 16 lines. We've got to come up with more than 16
right.
Now. How about 80,000 words, you know?
That's right.
So,
what do we say
Kill
now?
Kill Point came about because there is what is the point at which you would take another life? And that was kind of the premise of the book. So it's about what an Olympic diver and a European assassin and a South American drug lord and a DEA agent all have in common. They're all on their way to a kill point. And it's a thriller novel. There is adult content. I have to warn people, it's an over 18 book, definitely.
Okay.
And it's the first in a trilogy.
And the second book is Blood Debt, and you're working on a third, so it's a trilogy. Is this all leading to, I guess what I find interesting when an author writes a book, from the first book, do you see where you're going for that third one, or does it surprise
Absolutely.
You along the way?
Absolutely. There's Kill Point is the first, Blood Debt is the second, Collusion is the third, and you have to have the entire trilogy in your head before you can write word one, or else you'll get caught up in the middle of the second book going, where are we going with this, you know? And for Carrie and I, we work together every day, and we have for the last 27 years. And so we're best friends. We get along well, and we can almost finish each other's thoughts. So when we sit down and have an idea like this, we have to outline it out. All your English classes from high school outlining comes back.
Oh, yeah.
With these books, has it ever gone through your mind, you know, in your wildest imagination, this would make a good TV or movie?
Yes. In fact, we have some friends who are connected to the television and movie industry, and we were contracted. We sent the book, the first book, Kill Point, to our friends, and they loved it, and they wanted to do it, and they contracted us to do a Lifetime movie on it. And then they realized that there are so many locations that we deal with in the first book, that it would be a huge budget, and they didn't really want to go that high with the budget. So it's still kind of going back and forth in negotiation, but it's we told them, okay, well, the second book only has two locations, Bogota, Colombia, and Los Angeles. But by the time we had actually finished it, we decided to go other places. So we told them, hey, we'll send you the second book because it'll be easier to get the budget for it. And then by the time we got to sending it, we realized, wait a minute, we're all over the world here. We decided to go farther than we wanted to go, and we couldn't stop ourselves. So we'll probably get stalled again. But it has been under consideration. Right now there's nothing definite, but we certainly would love it to go that way.
We would. And Collusion is even better. Once we have the whole trilogy down, not to say we won't try with Blood Debt too. Each book you could read separately, but it's good if you read them in succession.
Right. Well, our listeners can head to chatersongs.com, and I believe from there that they can order both books right now, the first two?
Right, they
yes.
can. In fact, Blood Debt went to number 37 on the Amazon bestseller list. We're really proud of that, seeing that we started at like 5,127,000.
Yeah, exactly. That's amazing to get up that high. That is a great accomplishment. And people can also head to tianawoods.com and enter their information there, and there's a chance to win some of those books as well. So great opportunities to get those books. I'm going to ask both of you about some of the other stories behind your songs after we come back from one of Tiana's songs in a moment. But, Tiana, before we get to Dancing with Elvis, when I saw your dad and you again the other night at the Country Music Association of Ontario meeting, we were talking about Anne of Green Gables that you did in Japan, and you were telling me, I'd heard the story before, but I didn't know I'd heard the extent that that book was popular in Japan before you took the play over there.
Yes, it's very popular there. So what happened was we were doing Anne of Green Gables in Burlington as well as Oakville. And while we were doing the show, the city approached us because Itapashi, Japan, is a twin city that we have in Japan. And Japan had given Burlington a huge display of fireworks for a Sound and Music Festival that we had a few years back. So the city wanted to give Itabashi something back, and they saw the show, and since Anne is so huge in Japan, they basically said, well, we'd like to take the show to Japan. And my dad had actually produced the show at that time, and they called him, and he basically hung up on them. He just didn't believe them. But then they called back. They said, no, no, we're serious. We want to take the show. So we ended up raising the funds. We took a cast of 62 people for 10 days, and it was just an amazing experience. And I got to play Anne in the musical Anne of Green Gables. Yeah.
That
we also,
such...
Dave, sorry, we also ended up performing in the theater that the Beatles performed. So that was just great.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is such a cool story. And, I mean, that's I was saying this the other night, that you never know what opportunity, if you think outside the box or do something a little different, what opportunities you'll have in the music business, because that isn't something you could have foreseen probably, you know, a few months or a year before.
No, that's true. And you know what? The business is really like that. You really just don't know what's going to happen. And that's why you just have to really be ready for the future. And, you know, for myself, I'm always practicing. I'm always preparing just for what will happen in the future and those offers.
Yeah, you got to be ready when they show up. We're going to play Dancing with Elvis now, which is an earlier cut of yours, an earlier single as well. What can you tell us about the song, Kanna?
Yeah, this is actually my first single that I released to radio a couple years ago, and it's quite a special one to me because I share the same birthday as Elvis Presley. So when I was given this song, it was kind of a gift, and I just had to perform it just because of that connection. And funny thing with this song, it was released in Japan, and it went from number 171 to number 31. So I was hoping we get another trip to Japan out of that. But it's just a fun song. It was written by Ron Harbin and Stacey Worthington, produced by Rick Hutt, and just a fun song about a girl who meets her dream guy in Memphis, and she's in that magical place, and when she dances with him, she just feels like and imagines that she's dancing with Elvis.
Oh, great. I love that idea, and it's a great song. This is my guest, Tiana Woods, and Dancing with Elvis on In the Country. Ontario country artist Tiana Woods and her very first single called Dancing with Elvis here on In the Country. She's joining me on the line from Ontario, and on the line from Nashville, it's Carrie and Lynn Chater, husband and wife, hit songwriting team. We've covered a lot of their songs already in the show, but let's talk about a few more of them. The song that Reba did, one of her earlier ones, You're the First Time I Thought About Leaving, which is a great tune. Carrie, you wrote that with Dickie Lee. Can you tell us about the song and how it ended up with Reba?
It was one of my regular trips where I was still living in Los Angeles and coming out to Nashville to write with the writers. And, of course, I'd met Dickie and lots of the big writers, and they had kind of taken me under their wing. And it just happened that it was my day to write with Dickie Lee, and we sat around and just wrote the song. And I didn't really think too much of it. I thought, well, it's a nice song. We did something today. We actually worked today, and then Dickie and I just kind of took the rest of the day off and had fun just getting to know each other. And then after my trip, I flew back to Los Angeles, and about a month later, I get a call from the publisher, and he says, "You got a song on a new artist on her album, Reba McEntire. She's had a number one, and she's going to now put out another album. And you're on it." And I said, "Really? What song is that?" He said, "Well, You're the First Time I've Thought About Leaving, the one you wrote with Dickie Lee." I said, "Oh, that's nice." And I was thinking to myself, well, you know, it's a good song, but fine. I didn't even expect it to get recorded necessarily. And then right. About 2 weeks later, they called and said, "You know, they've recorded that song with Reba, and they love it, and it's going to be her next single." And I wanted to say, "Really?" But what is I said, "Of course, well, that's great, you know." So then she went ahead, of course, and put it out, and it went to number one. And I was still going, "Really? Gee, wow, you know." Surprise. But of course, Dickie is, again, he's one of the wonderful people, and he's written lots of great songs. And I had as much fun writing with the writers here, or more fun than I was having with the writers out in California, so I decided to move here, you know, and picked it up from there.
Now, another song I wanted to ask you about, Carrie, a song you wrote with Danny Mayo, Alabama, one of my favorite country groups, probably my favorite, got into them early on, love all their stuff, and this song came around in 1989, If I Had You, which has a really cool, the verses in it just are kind of just cool acoustic almost. Tell us about writing that song and how it got to Alabama.
Well, Danny had written the song, and it was called If I Had a Girl Like You. And he had taken it to his publishers, and they didn't like it. So they said, "No, we don't even want to spend the money to demo it." And so he called me, and I didn't know him very well, but we obviously knew each other. And he said, "Listen, I wrote this song, and my publisher doesn't like it. And so I know you've got a studio. Would you demo it for me?" And I said, "Well, sure. Come on out to the house, and we'll demo it up." And he said, "Oh, by the way, since my publisher doesn't like it, if you would consider listening to it before we demo it, and give me some ideas for how to make it a song that they might like, I'd appreciate that too." So I said, "Well, come on out to the house. Let's have a listen." So he played it, and I said, "You know, it's pretty good. Now, here's what I would do. I would take the girl thing out. I would just say, if I had you. And let's make it more one-on-one personal, and let's rearrange these chords and these words a little bit, and let's drive for a one-on-one kind of song where the singer can be talking directly to someone, and not even though it's really close, it's still kind of, when you put a girl like you, it sounds like a third person kind of a thought. Let's make it more intimate."
Right.
And he loved that idea. So we demoed it up real quickly, and then he went in to the publisher, and the publisher still really didn't like it. So they said, "Well, we'll hang on to it, and we'll just put it on the shelf here." And they kind of ignored it for a while. And then Barry Beckett came in, and he said, "I'm looking for Alabama. What have you got?" So this publisher played him a lot of songs.
22 songs.
22 songs. And Barry kept saying, "No, that's not it. No, that's not it. No, that's not it." And so finally he got up to leave, and he said, as he was literally getting out of the chair, he turned back and said, haven't you got anything that Alabama could do? And so the publisher reached in the drawer and said, well, I've got this thing that Kerry and Danny wrote. Listen to them. What do you think? And he played it for Barry, and Barry said, well, that's a hit. Why didn't you play me that in the first place? So he walked out, and the rest is history, you know. Number one.
That went to number one, and it was Song of the Decade in 89 by the group of the decade.
Amazing.
Let me just cap off with, you know, God bless Barry Beckett, and he was a wonderful, wonderful person. And we miss him dearly, and he just was a wonderful guy.
The excitement of not only when Alabama, in this case, records a song of yours, but then, of course, it, you know, takes a while to get released sometimes, but then you see that climb from, you know, entering the charts to the top. That's got to be a fun couple of weeks or months or whatever length of period to see that ride.
It is very exciting, and on another song, kind of a similar story, a song I wrote here with Charlie Black and Rory Burke called I Know a Heartache When I See One. This was back a while, and Jennifer Warren's put it out, and she'd had a hit with Right Time of the Night, and now they were looking for her follow-up, and I had come back from Nashville with I Know a Heartache When I See One, and my publisher took it right over and said, how about this one, and they loved it. So they put it out. They did it, put it out, and it's a fabulous record, and it went on the charts, to get back to what you were talking about, it went on the charts at 96. And the next week, it was 97. The third week, it was 99. The fourth week, it went off the charts altogether. The fifth week, it came back in at 95. And then it started this slow process, week by week, of moving up slowly on the charts.
Because the disc jockeys loved it.
Because the disc jockeys around the country loved her and this particular song. So they kept playing it, whether it was on the charts or not, and they kept getting a lot of requests, I want to hear that song again, kind of thing. So it was kind of doing its own thing. Well, 26 weeks later, it's in the top 20. So my publisher called the record company and said, listen, you know, we've got a top 20 record, so what do you need from us to push it up the charts? From there, let's get a number one record here. And it's almost a literal quote. The record company said, what record are you talking about? They had even ignored it because it was obvious it was on the charts, but it was going so slowly up the charts and had fallen off in the beginning. So they wrote it off. Oh, well, she didn't have a hit this time. Maybe we'll try again with another song. And they went off on that direction, and didn't realize, hey, man, we got a top 20 record here. We can make this go all the way if we want to. So that was a real sweat on the brow kind of thing. I wonder if it's going to get any higher than it's going to get, you know.
What a great story. Love to hear that, how that song just had a life of its own and kept going. I mean, so many people know it, Jennifer Warren's I Know a Heartache When I See One, a great song. Lynn, I wanted to ask you, and I know that both you and Kerry do this, but I'll let you sort of talk about this. When you attend things like Tin Pan North and maybe more the instructional side where you're critiquing other songwriters and in other capacities mentoring maybe new songwriters or even just writing with, you know, new artists, new songwriters and maybe giving them some guidance in that writing, how much do you enjoy that role?
New writers have such a wealth of information and ideas because they haven't been told no. You know, it's this wealth of a wellspring of great lines and thoughts. I love writing with new writers. I love to hear their songs because it is such a fresh outlook. They don't have the formula down. So a lot of times, instead of going verse, chorus, verse, they'll start with the chorus on some minor key, and it'll be so refreshing. But we love to do seminars and critique sessions with new writers.
Yeah, it's I think it's an important part of the whole process, because the new writer then gets information on how to improve the song, and it's not always negative. It's constructive criticism.
Oh, it's always constructive criticism. But the first time I was in a critique session, I was an ASCAP writer at the time, and I was I got into the ASCAP workshop, for which you have to audition. And I was thrilled that I got into the ASCAP workshop. And the facilitator at the time that my song was being played, you know, after the song was being played, he picked up my lyric sheet and he looked at it and he said, "The only thing that makes this a song is it has two verses and a chorus." And that was in front of 60 people. And I'm kind of slouching down in my chair. And I thought to myself, if I ever get to his position, I'm never going to say that to someone. I'm always going to start with something positive. And then I'll go on and say, you know, if I was writing this, I would do this and change this line this way.
I love that approach. It's just, it's not an aggressive or negative approach. It's helpful, as you said. And that's what the writer needs. And oftentimes it's not that the whole song needs work, but maybe just the bridge or the first verse or a couple lines. So that's great. You can zero in on.
And who's to say that it's not going to be a hit just because one person doesn't like it? I mean, has there ever been a number one song that you didn't like? Tons of them,
exactly.
I'm sure.
Yeah, there's not like a consensus on it. There's a song we go to number one, and you hear a lot of people say, "I don't like that song." So you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that goes to the point that probably good to have maybe several coaches or critiquers listen to a song, not to just listen to one if you're not sure.
Absolutely.
Tin Pan North was one of those events where you performed at. I think this was back in 2011. And I think that was where you you all met, all three of you.
That is where we met. In fact, we had just finished performing at the club, I think. There was a, what was it, Coltrane's Club we did Friday night. And then it was the Saturday show that we met you, Tiana, wasn't it?
It was the Saturday show, and I can't remember the name of the location in Toronto, but, like, I remember the night. It was a great night, and, you know, Lynn and Carrie were up there doing their songs with some other songwriters, and I just happened to go over and say hello after the show and introduce myself, and we just kind of hit it off, right?
We talked for a while and met your dad, and we had sung IOU. I think your dad had said that he loved that song too. And then within a couple months, we get a phone call, Dave, that said that was from Tiana, and, "Hey, I'm going to be in Nashville. Do you want to write?" "Well, sure. We'll write. Come on down." So she came by the house, and we wrote a song, and "You're As Gone As Yesterday," and we were upstairs putting it down. And her mom and dad came back, and I thought she was going to stay for a while. They had just driven in from where, Hamilton?
Burlington, yeah. Just
Burlington, just driven in from Burlington. And so I said, "Well, how long are you staying in Nashville?" And Bob looked at his watch and said, "About 20 more minutes." And Tiana, this is what length she goes to for her career. I mean, she just drove to Nashville and wrote a song and drove back.
There you go.
You got to do
what
it.
What a story. There's a lesson in perseverance there and dedication and just making contacts in the first place. She approached you, talked, and, I mean, it's so amazing how that has led to what we have today. Tiana Woods, Carrie Chater, and Lynn Gillespie Chater, chatersongs.com. Check out tiannawoods.com for everybody listening. Thanks so much for all of you for being here.
Well,
thank you, Dave.
This has been wonderful for us. We've really enjoyed it, and we hope that if you're down in this area, you're going to come see us. You know,
that's right. Our house is
come on out
open.
To the house.
Oh, that
thank
is so
you for
nice.
Inviting
thank
us,
you.
Dave. Always great talking to you, Dave, and Lynn and Carrie. You know, I just love you guys, and it's always great hearing your stories.
Thanks, Tiana. Thanks, Dave.
It's been an honor having all of you here, Tiana from Ontario, and Carrie Chater and Lynn Chater on the line from Nashville. What a great evening. I'm Dave Woods. For more country music interviews, you can head on over to inthecountryinterviews.com.